Blog Talk Radio.
And thanks. Mojuba Akoda, Mojuba Asheda, Mojuba Aluwa Mi, Apolabi Pega, Mojuba Araba Mi, Adesanya Awuyade, Mojuba Ogute Compound Ode Remo, Mojuba Baba, Mojuba Yeye, Mojuba Egun to all the God children, Mojuba Egun to all the Babalawos, the Ears, Mojuba Egungun to all the chiefs, Mojuba Egungun to all the Awos, Mojuba Egungun to all those that are listening, who are tuned in. We give praise and thanks to the Most High. We say Ashe, 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 Ashe,
Ashe,
Ashe,
Ashe, Ashe. Welcome to Sign of the Times, everybody. This is Queen Tahira. Sign of the Times is brought to you by the UAC, the United African Coalition for Justice and Human Rights. We started the UAC after the unjust Zimmerman verdict of 2013, and every Sunday at 6:30 p.m., we invite you to participate in our FUBU weekly conference calls. That means it is for us, by us, and about us. The number to dial is area code 712-432-1500. Again, every Sunday, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we get together and we just kick it. We talk about what's going on in our communities, some of the visions that we'd like to see happen in our neighborhoods and in our cities, and how we can collectively work together to achieve our goal of rebuilding the village. The number to dial is area code 712-432-1500, and the access code is 220-981-POUND. We also want to remind you to please send in your $10 monthly donation so we can keep Sign of the Times on the air, as well as in the spring of 2015, we're looking at coming to your city, to your community, and to your neighborhood to talk about some of the things that are going on there and how we can collectively, again, come together as one to unite around our common issues. The address to send that via PayPal is sign, the letter O, the times, 19@gmail.com. Again, our PayPal email address, please make your $10 monthly donation. We really need it. The address to do that is signothetimes19@gmail.com. As I usually go into, we started the UAC after the Unjust Zimmerman verdict, and it was actually catapulted by a page on Facebook called If Zimmerman Walks, We All Walk, Blackout NYC. And through the collective works of that group, through, I guess, the commonalities, again, that we have in our cities, we were able to put together a 10-point platform. We were able to establish the weekly conference calls, and we were actually able to establish, again, the UAC and subsequently from that Sign of the Times. So tonight I have the pleasure of having one of the original founders of the If Zimmerman Walks, We All Walk Blackout NYC page, Frank Shaw, joining me from New York City. Good evening, Brother Frank. How are you doing tonight?
Good evening, my sister. How are you and everybody else doing? Big shout out and much peace and blessings to all the callers listening in.
Ashe. Welcome. Well, we're going to get this party started. And so can you go ahead and introduce yourself, talk about a little bit about who you are and what made you get involved in grassroots, boots-on-the-ground community activism?
My name is Frank Shaw Francois. I'm from Queens, New York. I'm a community activist, full-time, dedicated public servant for the upliftment and empowerment of the masses. I got involved in the fight for justice because I've seen many of our people suffer from egregious injustices. Myself, I've personally been a victim of many systematic injustices, and I decided and I realized that unless we all come together and hang together, then we will surely all hang separately, and we will continue to be victims of systematic injustice, and our children will also be victims of systematic injustice. So I think it's time that we all come together and do something to stop this and put an end to it.
So New York has... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead, sister. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say New York has been a hotbed for a few months now since the murder of Eric Garner. Can you talk about some of the things that have happened there in 2014 and where you see them, you know, I guess, going in 2015?
Well, we first say this. I got involved in boycotting and demonstrating and rallying in 1990. There was a Korean store that had violated many black people, and we boycotted that Korean store. And then there was a young black man by the name of Adam Taylor who was killed in Crown Heights. And a lot of the young brothers retired and they started rioting. And things pretty much stayed kind of calm. Even after the Rodney King raid, New York didn't really get up in arms and take to the streets up until the time of the Sean Bell murder. And then a lot of brothers took to the streets for a little while, but that died out. And after the Trayvon Martin incidents, the things, people started really, really getting tired and frustrated. And a lot of brothers and sisters started getting on board for the movement, not just for the moment. Then you had a young brother by the name of Ramali Graham, who was killed in the Bronx February 2nd, 2012. And that galvanized a lot of people. And, you know, the people have been galvanizing because of these events, have been staying in touch and just been snowballing and building. And, you know, we had brothers like Kamani Gray that was killed in the Bronx and, you know, New York City. The list goes on and on and on and on. But what happened to Aragona, when everybody seen it, the video and heard, you know, the new slogan that we all said is, I can't breathe, and it just, that was just outrageous to see that cop still on top of that brother choking him and getting off with that, and then the Mike Brown incident was, that brother was standing there with his hands up by many eyewitness reports, and he was still shot to death. New York just got up in arms, and I mean, 2014, we were out in the streets by the thousands. There was one time, it must have been about 20,000-30,000 of us, if not 50,000 of us, that came across the Brooklyn Bridge. We extended from one side of the bridge to the other side of the bridge. We shut the Brooklyn Bridge down. We don't march with no permits. We don't seek the police commission to protest against it. We just take to the streets and members and let them know these are our streets. We shut down the FDR Drive, which is a major highway in Manhattan. We shut down their tunnels. We've been marching on Christmas Eve, New Year's Eve. We have not allowed anything to derail us. We have not allowed their cries for a lull to deter us. You know, we are determined to stay in the streets. And we've made a mark in 2014. We've got their attention. We've got the nation's attention. That is in St. Louis and brothers and sisters in L.A. and San Francisco. They've been doing a lot of things. And we have got worldwide attention. And in 2015, we have plans to press on even harder. This Sunday, brothers and sisters in Phoenix, they plan on interrupting the Super Bowl. They've been trying this for a couple of months, and they're going to be out there in force, you know, to interrupt America's Super Bowl. We're also planning in New York to interrupt the NBA All-Star Game, All-Star Weekend, which will be February 12th, 13th, and 14th in Madison Square Garden in the Barclays. So we have a lot of dedicated organizations, got a lot of dedicated individuals, youngsters, and a lot of veterans that are determined to use every and any means necessary to keep our plight and our issues on the forefront of everybody's minds and to demand justice by boycotting, imposing economic sanctions, demonstrating, putting legislative pressure for legislative changes and doing anything and everything that we can. You know? Recently, can you hear me? Hello?
Hello?
Yes. Recently, you know, a brother named Ishmael came up here and said that he killed two NYPD officers. Well, we really don't know what happened. You know, it could be smoke and mirrors. They're going to set that up as a way to try to get some sympathy for the officer. That's what they're really trying to do now. They're trying to repair their bad standing in the community. You know, they're trying to get a better name for this. But we're not going for it. You know, we're not going for no work sensitivity training or none of the same old sucking jobs, smoking mirrors tricks. We're demanding real changes. We have a list of demands, and we plan on pushing on until we demand that.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right. So you are you seeing any results as to, you know, for the work that you all have put in so far?
Oh, yeah, we're seeing a lot of results. You know, we're getting a lot of international attention. The politicians are reaching out and trying to extend an olive branch and give us a football back. And the reason why they're doing that is because, obviously, we have trade. And obviously, we have had an impact on the economy. We have had an impact on the flow of traffic. And they want to appease us any way they can so that we could stop interrupting their business as usual. So, yeah, they're not going to come out and say it per se that, yes, you know, the protesters are winning and the demonstrators are gaining attention. They're not going to ever admit that. but just by their actions, it's showing us that we have them on the run and we are running the fight. We definitely got them backing up and reconsidering things. And I appeal to everybody to don't just take these small concessions and let the fight be over. We got to push on. We got to have that kill instinct. You know what I mean? We got them wounded. We got to finish them off.
Now, the brother that filmed Eric Garner, Ramsey Orta, how is he doing? And what is the progress of his case? I know he was indicted on some gun charges that he was saying was pretty much in an act of retaliation. Where is that case at this point?
Well, we're trying to get anybody, we're trying to send a strong signal that if anybody steps up and tries to go up against them, that they are going to use whatever illegal means necessary to send a message to this person. This case right now is still in the trial court, waiting to go to trial. He's a strong man. He understands what's going on. He has a lot of support from everybody in the city, and he's not going to kowtow or bow down to this illegal persecution. So we've been going to court with him, and we have a defense firm that we're trying to raise up to give him some decent attorneys and investigators, because what he was saying basically was the woman who approached him and asked him a few questions, he did not know that woman, and that woman has ties to NYPD. So, NYPD and law enforcement agencies all around this nation, they're always going to lie and try to justify what they're doing. But I personally, I don't give none of them the benefit of the doubt, because I don't, I know for a fact, I have no doubt that they're going to ever give us any benefit. So why should we listen to anything that they're saying?
So how do people donate to Brother Ramsey's Defense Fund? Do you have that information available for us?
I can get you that information so that people who want to donate will be able to donate. I just got to contact a few people and find out exactly which PayPal account or the bank account they can send that money to.
Okay. And what I'll do to let everybody know is paste it on our Facebook pages for Sign of the Times, UAC, and the Instrument Walks. We all welcome. NYC group. So, Brother Frank, let's go back a little bit and talk about the If Zimmerman Walks group and what inspired that, and how did it grow so big so fast? It's over 8,000 members now. So tell me a little bit about your inspiration for doing that.
Well, it's unfortunate that we in the Metal Arena have been out there. We know that when a white man is accused of violating the civil rights or killing a black man, or when a police officer violates or kills a black man, that there's a 95% chance that they're going to get away with it with no indictment, no nothing. So when I see this happening with Trey Ryan, I said, you know what, we need to preemptively get the people ready and let them know that more than likely there's not going to be an indictment, no matter what the evidence shows, they're going to justify it in some way. So I, myself, people like you, and other people, you are very definitely instrumental. You are one of the family members, and we just invited a lot of people, and we share information, we share the facts, and, you know, the people take it from there. They're frustrated, they're tired of the injustices, and a lot of people are afraid to speak up and speak out, because oftentimes they may lose their job, they may be ostracized for not going along with the status quo and saying it's politically correct. But a lot of people are understanding that no matter what, man, we have to all do something to come together, that they cannot fire all of us, they cannot just keep killing our children and our women and violating us like this. And, you know, the group, we post a lot of videos and a lot of things that, you know, people can see for themselves, man. It's just not right what's been happening. And they oftentimes try to blow smoke up our ass and make us think that what was happening was something in the past, and to blow up in her face because it was going to be an avenue. What was happening is people using the internet to share a lot of information, to share videos firsthand. People could see themselves what's going on. Everyone had a phone, a camera, and, you know, everyone is taking the time to film things that they feel is not right and is being shared instantly. So I think that's a major, major change. You know, it's not that there's an uptick in these events or the knowledge and privacy that we're suffering. It's just that because of the internet and camera phones and different websites, people are able to see in real time the injustices that are happening all around the world. And these things often go viral, people sharing them. All around the world. We've created a big network from LA to San Francisco, Dallas. There's a big network of us, so you're a big part of that network, and we stay in touch and keep everybody informed of what's going on. And even more importantly, we are coming up with solutions. We're free thinking to come up with solutions and demands. So it's not just that we. Some people don't like to march, you know, I understand. Some people don't like to demonstrate. Some people don't think their cops are going to work. You know, some people, no matter what, just don't want to do anything. But we're finding the ones that are willing to do something. And those who want to march, well, we're marching. Those who want to boycott, well, they're boycotting. Unfortunately, and I don't condone this, you know, there are those who would try to say that I am inspiring people to do that, but that's not the case. Everything that I'm trying to do is nonviolent. But you have some people who are so frustrated that they're willing to take up arms. And that's been happening. You have a lot of officers across this country who have been unprovokedly attacked. I don't want to say it like that. But, I mean, they themselves have not done anything. It's just the mere fact that they're an officer on the job and somebody has been frustrated with all of the injustice and the police brutality, which really is police criminality, they're just lashing out on their own. And I've been warning a lot of political leaders and a lot of officials that this is what's going to happen because, you know, we have people who have been expressing their view to me. And so, why are you lashing? That ain't going to do no good. We need to do this. We need to do that. And I personally try to talk them out of it, but many of them are going over. They are frustrated. They are fed up. They are tired. They see no other way out. You know, we're trying to remind them and everybody that Black Lives Matter, but the authorities and the police, by their actions, are saying Black Lives don't matter. You know, so we're at a cusp, we're at a big precipice right now. Whereas, you know, America, I hate to say it, is a tinderbox. And if we, the true justice loving people, do not do something, this thing might just explode in everybody's face, and I don't see anybody being the winner.
Ashe, that's right.
Yeah, so when you look up, you're absolutely on point when you talk about there are so many quote-unquote leaders out here, but yet what we see is a recurrence of the same types of incidents, the same type of pain being inflicted on us by the state. And so, you know, why do you think that there's so much division of forces when we have, you know, these common things that we could be working on together? And how can we evolve so we can have more unity at the table?
Well, that is the million-dollar question with a million-dollar elusive answer. That is something that we Black people have been searching for a long time. I have my opinion and positions on it. First and foremost, you know, we have been purposely divided with the William Lynch syndrome, whereas we look at each other and hold a slight difference against each other. Religion plays a major part where there's many different Christian sects, and just Christian sects won't work with no Muslims, or they won't even work with any other Christian sects if you don't believe in how they believe, and you have some Muslims who are the same way, and you have some atheists and some Hebrews. You know, religion is a big dividing factor. You have the socioeconomic factor. You know, you have some black people who have a little bit more money, who have been able to make it in your system. And I call them the token ones because, you know, it's not matter how hard you work. You know, there are a lot of brothers who have worked hard, who are really talented, and they still don't make it. You know, so those who have made it, they often look back on the other brothers and be like, oh, I need to do this, you're lazy, ain't them holding your back, you know, you're your biggest weapon. You know, so that, I call that the socioeconomic aspect, where those of us who do have a little are not willing to admit that, okay, they slipped through that net, that judgment that is designed to keep the masses back. Most of them are not even willing to really do anything significantly and make a sacrifice to reach back into the community. I mean, Oprah Winfrey does a few things here and there, but for the most part, what she's doing is not going to really make a difference. You know, we got all these rappers, all these athletes, man, they were to come together, and I didn't even say donate their money, but invest their money. They can collectively rebuild a city like Detroit. They can collectively rebuild and own a city like Cincinnati, whereas everybody can have jobs, jobs that got paid slave wages, jobs that are paying livable wages. You know, that's another one of our issues. You know, it's not a divisive issue, as your question is, what is dividing us? But that's another one of our issues, where we're being overworked and underpaid and overcharged. You know, so it's a dog-eat-dog rat race out here where everybody's just trying to survive and try to get over the next one and make sure they eat their children eat, as opposed to the solution, which I think is us all working together, all pooling our resources and realizing that there is enough of everything for everybody. Nobody has to starve. Nobody has to live like this. The only reason why the poor are so poor is because the rich are so rich.
That's right.
There's a direct correlation to that. You understand? When you got people that got $10 billion, $20 billion, $50 billion, and they're controlling the population, they're controlling the politicians, they're controlling the laws, what do you expect to happen? You know, every now and then they may do some so-called charitable goodwill gesture, but it's really not doing nothing. They're just trying to make them appear to be human, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So we black people have many obstacles to overcome. The divisiveness is definitely first and foremost, and I would say that we stop looking at religious lines. It doesn't matter what religion you are. It doesn't matter how much money you got. Those white people are never going to actually see you as their equal or treat you as an equal. And until we realize that we have to do for self, we have to produce and manufacture all the goods and services that we use. You can look at any community, look at a Chinese community, look at a Jewish community. You don't see no black businesses there. But you come to our communities are full of good Jewish businesses, big businesses, Arabs, Koreans, Chinese, and none of them give back in any significant amount to our communities. Many of them don't even hire us. You know, this is not for you. I mean, I'm not speaking of any community. This is an ongoing problem. And we have a solution to deal with that. We're going to pull with our money, and not just the big rich guys in the community, but the average person. Are we going to pull our money, start off with little grocery stores and fish markets and resale, and go from there to electronic stores, you know? And like I said, produce and manufacture all the things that we consume and use.
Okay. We talk about this on Sign of the Times and via the UAC. We have a lot of soothsayers in our community. And do you think that they will ever be held accountable for, giving this facade that they are really advocates for us when we have this problem-reaction-solution ploy that it seems like, our quote-unquote leaders have gotten so savvy at that we don't recognize it coming from them, but we're quick to recognize it coming from the state. So do you think that the people who have perpetrated a fraud on the community will ever be held accountable, or should we just look at developing new leadership that will just basically push them out of the way?
Well, that's a good question. And unfortunately, the oppressors have often used our people, you know, to give us false hope. And as long as the oppressors are in power and the false leaders, the fake leaders, the charlatans that they put in place to control us, those charlatans, those fake leaders, those misleaders will not be held accountable unless they do something against the oppressors. Unless, and this is what it's coming to, we take power. And they're going to do everything they can to make sure we don't take power because they're afraid that we may do to them what they have been doing to us. They're afraid that now if we take power and that there's real poverty, real fairness and justice, that we will have real courts and they will be held for war crimes. And they may be sentenced to death for life in prison. They may be stripped of all their wealth. So as you ask for our misleaders, as long as they're doing the bidding of the oppressor and the oppressors are in power and they're not going against the bidding and the wishes of the oppressors, no, they're not going to be held accountable. We have to hold them accountable. We have to hold them out. We have to identify who are the shutouts. We have to identify who is not really doing, who is not actually working in the best interest of the masses and who is trying to sell us snake oil. We have to identify them. We have to have ways and means to point them out and put them to the test and let them know we don't need them no longer. And we have a lot of ways of new, innovative, dynamic leaders who are willing to do just that and cut out the backroom meetings and the backroom deals and to do everything with total transparency and full disclosure where everybody can know where you truly stand on an issue.
That's right.
Well, let me ask you this then. What would victory look like? And do you see us separating? Should we separate or should we infiltrate? And what I mean by that is, are we developing this new leadership in order to become a part of the existing system, or are we looking at incorporating our own?
Well, now that's a good question too. You asked a lot of good questions. And I often don't think in terms of this or that. And as you say, should we infiltrate or separate? I said we should infiltrate until we can fully separate. I don't believe that we should have all right police force. That's not going to do no good. I don't believe that we should stop voting. That's counteractive, but voting is really not doing us that much that good, but not voting would be even worse, not to vote at all. So until we can have this land of our own, if we are self-sufficient and we have all the funds that we need to sustain ourselves, we have to infiltrate. We need to be a part of the political system. We have to be a part of the law and political system. But what happens, oftentimes a lot of brothers, they get their foot in the door and they get a little bit more money than they used to, and they forget about those who are in the struggle. They become a part of the system. So we have to be mindful of that as we are getting some of the new leaders to get into position where they can do something, that we will hold them accountable, that they must do what they say they're going to do. If not, then we're giving them out too. If you're going to do anything and shut on me, that's a problem. That is one of the problems. A lot of brothers, I'm sorry, they start off with got good intentions. But then they get a little piece of that pie and start taking good to them. Then the oppressors start getting up in their ear and it's getting their favor. And we've got to always remind them where they came from, who they are, and who they work for. Me personally, I consider myself a servant of the people. I work for the people. I don't work for the politicians. I don't work for the system. Nor do I answer to them. Nor do I accept any money from them. But that's another issue. You know, you get these organizations and you get these leaders and they start accepting this money with the strings attached. And then those profiteers who are paying for the puppets start calling shots. Oh, you can't do this. You can't do that. Don't do that. They start justifying shit that's going to work to our disadvantage. It's not going to really help us. So we got to be mindful of that, too.
That's right.
Well, we're almost at.
Can you give me 15 minutes? And then one real quick move. I'll call you back in 15 minutes. That'd be all right?
Mm-hmm.
Can I call you back in 15 minutes?
Oh, sure, right. Sure. We can take a quick break. So we're almost at the top of the hour. This is Queen Tahira. You're listening to Sign of the Times. We'll be right back.
15 minutes. I'll get you back.
Okay.
Things that's held us down, but now it looks like things are finally coming around. I know we've got a long, long way to go, and where we'll end up, I don't know. But we won't let nothing hold us back. We're putting ourselves together, we're polishing up our act.
Ain't no stopping.
This is Queen Tahira. I just want to thank everybody for their patience while Brother Shaw had to step away. I'm not sure if it's an emergency situation or what, but I'm going to hang out for a few minutes and give him an opportunity to call back. But if you would like to be a part of this conversation, feel free to push the number one, and we can go ahead and continue the dialogue if he shows back up. And if not, we'll just kick it. All right, so please enjoy the music until I get back with you. Thank you for your patience.
It's been far too long, y'all. Just join me while I get in line. Yeah, yeah. We're leaving the negative people way behind. On today.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back. This is Queen Tahir. You're listening to Sign of the Times. And as a reminder, please make your $10 monthly donation to Sign of the Times via our PayPal account at sign, the letter O, the times, 19@gmail.com. Again, our email address via PayPal to make your $10 contribution is sign, O, the times, 19@gmail.com. Rejoining us is Brother Frank Shaw of Queens, New York, one of the original founders of the Isser Women Walks We All Walk Blackout NYC page, which is where the UAC and Sign of the Times grew its roots. So welcome back, Brother Frank. Everything okay?
Yes, everything all right. Can you hear me clearly? I know I got a text saying I sounded
better. Oh, yes, so much better. Yes, yes, thank you. Okay, so let's pick up where we left off. And what I want to know is how can we get more young people involved? I know that the majority of the population that are on the Isser Women Walks page are people in, you know, their early 30s at the most. So the majority of those people are, you know, young folks. And so how can we get them more involved in the movement, and what role do you see them having to play in it?
Well, man, you ain't going to give me no easy questions tonight, are you?
Once again,
it's a question that has to be asked. These are tactics that we're using. What we're doing in New York, we're going straight to the high schools. We're going to the colleges. One of the most successful marches that we have had in New York year to date, organized by the college students in Columbia, the college students in CUNY. They came out. They have the stamina. They have the balls. Once you get them interested in showing them that this is their future, and this is what we're letting them know, this is their future, they will be the revolution. They will be the evolution. They will be the new tomorrow. So oftentimes when you talk to these youngsters, they don't know who you are. They don't know they should trust you if you understand what they're about, if you understand their issues. So you have to relate to them and let them know, this is what we do, that, you know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, I was you. I understand what you're going through, even though there's a lot of new technologies and new things that's going on. We understand you. And you got to understand also with a lot of these youngsters, a lot of them have, I hate to say this, but they have, in all essence, given up hope. You know what I mean? They have been let down by their parents, by their brothers, their sisters, their aunts, their uncles, their clergy people, their teachers, the police. A lot of them do not have any hope that society is going to do right by them. So they're kind of clannish. They're kind of cliquish. You know, they believe in their clique, their gang, their squad, their mob, whatever you want to call it. And that's where their loyalty lies, not to us. So we have a job to, first and foremost, prove to them that we care, that we really care, and we're not just giving them lip service and doing a lot of the other things that a lot of other people have done to them and giving them false promises and just use them. So I think those are some of the key things that we have to do. Also, speaking to their independent interests. Like with a lot of college students, with how we get at them, we talk about the tuitions, the high tuitions, and what we need to do to change this. We let them be aware that a lot of the student loans that they have, they may be paying for it well into their 50s. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, this is all part of the systematic injustice that is perpetrated against all of us, and that we don't have to continue to go for these outrageous, systematic forms of taxation in all matters. You know, you don't have to go for it. You know what I mean? You understand what I'm saying? Hello?
Absolutely. And one of the things that we've done, you know, as sisters we've come together and formed Sisters of the Soul group. And, you know, we've had a couple of broadcasts on Sign of the Times, and, you know, we're looking at trying to bring the men together. But it seems like there's more competition than camaraderie between a lot of our brothers. And so can you speak to that, and can you talk about, you know, how we could possibly be supportive as women when our brothers are on the front lines? And, you know, how can more brothers, I guess, find more things in common than things that are different?
Man, you're going to be in a break tonight, right?
No.
Well, that's all right.
No.
That's all right. I like it. Once again, you asked some plenty of great questions. And there are some sisters that find, let me just give you a counterpart of that, some sisters find it hard to work with other sisters. But it's a good thing that you and the sisters that you have put together are able to work with each other. And some brothers find it easy to work with each other. You know, you have some Muslims who can work with other Muslims and some who can't work with other Muslims. They work with other Christians. As you say, common ground, there's a lot of common ground. Number one, that we're all in the same oppressive boat. No matter where it is in that boat that you're sitting, it's an oppressive boat, and we have to realize that we got to work together to get around this. I mean, the answer that I'm giving you is pretty much like the same answer to your question earlier about what divides us. You know what I'm saying? These are the type of things that keep certain brothers from working together. And instead of working together, they're competing with each other as opposed to completing each other. So what do we do to tell these brothers the importance of working together, how to get in where you fit in? You know, every group is not for you. I'm not joining the NAACP. I'm not down with NAN. You know, I'm not working against them, but I guess the bottom line, you got to find like-minded people. And when you do, all of you guys have to be able to tolerate the inconsistencies, the imperfections, and realize that as a team, you know, the team comes first, and the teamwork is going to be better than trying to go about this your own way. So you got to find those groups of individuals that you can work with. And they're out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Well, I know one thing that I noticed when I was there in Harlem, it reminded me a lot of my own community here in Cincinnati and over the Rhine, and so much potential, so many beautiful, beautiful buildings and architecture, so many beautiful, beautiful people, and it looked as though it was being gentrified again, just as my community is here in Cincinnati. And so, you know, you've spoken about collective economics and us pooling our forces and our resources. So can you give us a little bit of idea on what a well-working, well-oiled collective economic plan would look like? And, you know, if there's anything that people should kind of prepare themselves for in achieving that goal, you know, what recommendations do you make so that we can make that happen?
All right, gentrification is a problem, is a major problem in New York City, as it is in many of the inner cities throughout the nation, where, you know, the upper class have realized that in the 50s and the 60s, they gave up the prime real estate exchange for taking up residents in the suburbs, and the transportation is just not paying off. So they want to take back the inner cities, the core cities, closer to the transportation hubs and the working zones and the entertainment zones and everything else. What we as the people have to do is realize that we have to stop selling and understand that we do have some prime real estate. And even though some people may have bought it 30, 40 years ago, and somebody comes and they bought it 30, 40 years ago at $30,000, $40,000, somebody's now offering $300,000, $400,000. In 5-10 years from now, those properties would be worth $1 million. As for what we can do as individuals, I like to always remind people that the truth be told, many of us do not have the funds to compete with big business. We just don't have it. Those who do have it, they're not with it. So one of the economic plans that I've come up with, and I've been thinking about for years, is to get 5,000 people from different communities. You get 5,000 people, and say, for instance, in a city like New York that has 8 million people, which approximately 3.5 of them are black people, you get 5,000 people from Bed-Stuy, 5,000 people from Harlem, 5,000 people from Queens, 5,000 people from the Bronx, and different communities, and everybody just puts aside $10 a week. That's all. We ain't trying to get anybody to break the bank. And we're definitely not trying to get somebody to invest where now they have a controlling interest. Everybody's investing equally. And if you put aside that $10 a week, within 1 month, you'll be at $40. But you times that by 5,000 people, that is $200,000. $200,000 being pooled and put towards something that's going to be community-owned. There's a lot of power, especially if you've got 3 or 4 communities in Queens, 6, 7 communities in Brooklyn, 2 communities in Harlem, 2 communities in Brooklyn doing it, I mean in the Bronx doing it. You have a lot of buying power where the people now, and I always like to start off small as opposed to just, you know, don't run before you walk or walk before you crawl. And we get a store, a community store. And I don't care what anyone says, everybody that invested their money is an automatic customer. So you have 5,000 investors who've only invested $40. And now you got 5,000 customers. And you do the math yourself, those 5,000 customers buying all their food from the store will empower them and also create jobs for people in the community. And then after a year of doing that small little venture, then we go on to do bigger things, as what you're saying with the buildings, the real estate. We're pooling our money to make sure that when this building goes up for sale, we have the money there to buy it. Because we're starting to become our own banks because we have pooled that money. We have these grocery stores that are generating income and profits for everybody on a monthly basis. But we don't start there. We don't take that and jump into to the big game. We go from there and we open up our own laundromats, black owned laundromats, black owned clothing stores. But it starts off with that food. It starts off with that food. Mm-hmm. That's something that everybody has to have daily. Everybody's gonna buy food. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then we go on from there and just keep building and building till we have our own farms, we have our own factories. You know, I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel. This is much of what Marcus Garvey talked about, but I try to put it in a workable context. $10 a week. The hardest part about this is rounding up to 5,000 people in every community, but I have a plan to make that easy too. It doesn't matter if you're Muslim, if you're Christian, if you're, as long as you work, as long as you live in that community, then you're entitled to invest your money. And once the first prototype is up and working and successful, then everybody's going to want to get on board.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's I think it's a very comprehensive and doable vision. And, you know, like you said earlier, it's going to take for us in our age range, because I think we're about the same age, is to, you know, pull what we know and what we've experienced and what our pitfalls have been to try to continue to reach out to our young people, because they have the energy that it's going to take and the, you know, the backbone that it's going to take to stand up and courage and accomplish the things that you talked about. And, you know, I do believe that it is, can, and is going to happen. But it's just a matter of us staying consistent and persevering through all the adversities that we've seen. And, you know, according to the Chinese calendar, this is supposed to be a year of, reorganizing and kind of the balance starting to resurface versus last year was a lot of chaos and disorder. this year is the year of the lamb. And, you know, I really feel that in my spirit, you know, not because of the Chinese calendar, but because of the things that we've, you know, always order follows chaos. Chaos always precedes order. And so now it's time for us to get this thing back together, and I truly believe that it's going to definitely happen. And so, you know, one of the things that I saw you had on Facebook was the boycotting of, or the blackout, if you will, of the NBA games. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how people can support you, even if they may not necessarily be in New York City?
Well, I think I touched on it earlier. Unfortunately, a lot of the athletes and the big entertainers constantly support. I mean, we buy their products. We go to their games. Our youngsters look up to them. They follow them. They emulate them. But, you know, they do not, in turn, give us the same support. And we have to send a strong message. We have to let the athletes, the entertainers, big business, the politicians know that we're no longer going to support those who do not support us. We're no longer going to stand by and let the wealth and the labor of the black community be drained. This is why we're moving into economic sanctions. You know, we have to all sacrifice and realize that, you know, Jordans don't make you. You are who you are. You know, I'm not saying that it's wrong to want to have some of the finer things or it's a bad thing, but I think to be obsessed with it is sinful. We need to be obsessed with our character. We need to be obsessed with doing for each other, helping the community. Those are the things that we need to see that is cool. As for anybody that wants to help and assist, and they're not in New York, there's many ways they can help. You know, they could donate money. They could spread the word, make sure that they're spreading the word. They could buy the T-shirts. They could help make calls. They can join the group, shut down the NBA. I should send a link, if you can, send a link to the page or not by computer. Shut down the NBA All-Star Weekend 2015. Join the group. Stay aware of what's going on. Also be aware that this weekend, the brothers and sisters in Phoenix is doing the same thing out there. So we can send a strong message, you know, to the athletes that, yeah, we understood that many of y'all wore I Can't Breathe T-shirt, but, I mean, we were happy that you did that, but that's not enough. You guys got to do much more. You're capable of doing much more. But unfortunately, you know, I don't see them all as role models. A lot of people do see them as role models, but, you know, it would be good if some of them could step up and start being role models. The reason for that. And also, you know, to keep the pressure on the city, because the cities, they make a lot of money off of these big sport games and these arenas. And most of that money is going to the 1% top rich people. And, you know, they're gouging the poor people, $70, $80, $100 tickets, $500 tickets, you know, the cable licensing and all that. And very little of it is coming back into the hands of the masses of the people in the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely. Yeah, I'm here. Yeah. Well, you know, Brother Shaw, I know that you are extremely busy, but I do have one last question for you, and this is not a difficult one. Well, it could be, but you know, like I said, we are about the same age range, and so we both experience conscious hip hop. Hip-hop that was originally rooted in uplifting our people, higher infinite power, healing our people. And so the last question I have for you is, you know, do you think that conscious hip-hop will ever resurrect itself and resurface again and live out its true mission to empower and heal our people?
Well, not only do I think conscious hip-hop is re-electing itself. I think it's needed. I forgot what rapper who said it. I think it was KRS-One who said that if rap music can be used to lead people to do negative things, then surely we could use rap music to lead our people to do positive things. You have a lot of great conscious underground hip-hop rappers out here, Jaziri X, Immortal Technique, Rebel Diaz, that are incorporating learning and messages into the music. There's one rapper right now, and then I think he's on fire right now. His name is Gemstone, and he put out a warning to all these fake rappers that, you know, we're going to take rap back from the Jews and bring it back into the inner cities and infuse it with messages and infuse it with feel-goodness so people can feel good and be inspired to know who they are as opposed to this ratchet, what they call ratchet. I call it wretchedness. Everybody's trying to compete to see who could be the biggest fool. You know, you got world star hip hop. Everybody is trying to do something idiotic to get on world star hip hop just to have a minute of fame. And I think we need to use our music, you know, to inspire our youngsters to feel better. Me personally, I don't like to listen to a lot of that stuff because, I mean, it gets me hyped up. And I'm like, yeah, kill this nigga, I'm going to feel that bad. I'm like, oh, man, it starts getting inside of you. You know, just like a lot of these negative videos, they always give this story that when Grand Theft Auto first came out, man, I was sitting there smoking some weed, playing this game for about 8-9 hours straight. I'm hooked on the game. And in this game, you're running around, you're hitting people, you're finding guns, shooting people, you're doing all type of things, stealing cars. And then when I went outside and I got in my car, I was tempted to ride up on the sidewalk and hit somebody. And I realized right then and there that these video games blur the line between fantasy and reality. And some of these youngsters may not be able to discern the difference. They may not realize, but now you're in the real world. This ain't no video game. This is for keeps. Mm-hmm. You hurt somebody, yeah, you're really hurting them, and you're going to have to pay the price. So, you know, I'm against all of those type of things. I'm against a lot of the images that we see on TV. It's all propaganda. It's all mind-fudging our people, misleading our people. So I'm against all of that. You know, so the conscious hip-hop must come back, and it is on the rise, and we must embrace it.
All right, Brother Frank. Well, I'm going to let you go ahead and resume your evening, and feel free to join us on Sign of the Times anytime if there's anything going on that you want to make sure that the community knows about. And do you have any closing remarks that you'd like to let the community know?
Well, first, I'd like to thank you, Sister Queen Vanessa. I'd like to thank all the listeners for giving me this opportunity to share some information. I'd like to also remind everybody that we're going to win this fight together. We must win this fight. Let's stand together. Let's unite. Let's stand in solidarity. Let's all make the sacrifices to do what we must. You guys enjoy your night. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Brother Shaw. We'll talk to you soon here. All right, everybody. We're going to go ahead and close out a little bit early tonight in respect of Brother Shaw's time. If there is any questions or anything, feel free to hit me up on Facebook, Ask Queen Tahira. You also can reach Brother Shaw, Frank Shaw, Francois directly on Facebook, and I will be posting the NBA information on the blackout of the All-Star Game. So I love y'all. I will see you tomorrow night at 6 p.m. for open mic, beginning at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. In the meantime, between time, this is Queen Tahira signing off for the night. Peace out.
Like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. Bro!
broken glass everywhere. People pissing on the stage, you know they just don't care. I can't take the smell, can't take the noise. Got no money to move out, I guess I got no choice. Rats in the front room, roaches in the back, junkies in the alley with the baseball bat. I tried to get away, but I couldn't get far, cause a man with a tow truck repossessed my car. Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. Standing on the front stoop, hanging out the window, watching all the cars go by, roaring as the bugles blow. Crazy lady living in a bag, eating out of garbage bales, used to be a fag hag. Sex dance a tango, skipped the life and dangle. A zircon princess seemed to lost her senses. Down at the peep show, watching all the creeps, so she could tell her story to the girls back home. She went to the city and got so sedated, she had to get a push, she couldn't make it on her own. Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. My brother's doing fast on my mother's TV. Says she watches too much, it's just not healthy. All my children in the daytime, Dallas at night. Can't even see the game or the Sugar Ray fight. The bill collectors, they ring my phone and scare my wife when I'm not home. Got a bum education, double-digit inflation. Can't take the train to the job, there's a strike at the station. Me on King Kong, standing on my back, can't stop to turn around. Broke my sacroiliac, a mid-range migraine, cancer membrane. Sometimes I think I'm going insane, I swear I might hijack a plane. Don't push me, call, I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. My son said, Daddy, I don't want to go to school, cause the teacher's a jerk, he must think I'm a fool. And all the kids smoke reefer, I think it'd be cheaper if I just got a job, learn to be a street sweeper. I dance to the beat, shuffle my feet, wear my shirt and tie, and run with the creeps. Cause it's all about money, ain't a damn thing funny. You got to have a con in this land of milk and honey. They pushed that girl in front of the train, took her to the doctor, sewed her arm on the game. Stabbed that man right in his heart, gave him a transplant for a brand new start. I can't walk through the park cause it's crazy after dark. Keep my hand on my gun cause they got me on the run. I feel like an outlaw, broke my last glass jaw. Hear them say, you want some more? Living on a seesaw. Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. Say what? It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. A child is born with no state of mind, blind to the ways of mankind. God is smiling on you, but he's frowning too, because only God knows what you'll go through. You'll grow in the ghetto, living second rate, and your eyes will sing a song of deep hate. The places you play and where you stay looks like one great big alleyway. You'll admire all the number book takers, thugs, pimps, and pushers, and the big money makers. Driving big cars, spending 20s and 10s, and you want to grow up to be just like them. Smugglers, scramblers, burglars, gamblers, pickpocket peddlers, even panhandlers. You say I'm cool, I'm no fool, but then you wind up dropping out of high school. Now you're unemployed, all non-void, walking around like your pretty boy Floyd. Turn stick up kids, but look what you done did. Got sent up for an 8-year bid. Now your manhood is took and you're a Maytag. Spend the next 2 years as an undercover fag, being used and abused to serve like hell, till one day you was found hung dead in the cell. It was plain to see that your life was lost. You was cold in your body, swung back and forth, but now your eyes sing the sad song of how you live so fast and die so young. So don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes, it makes me wonder how I keep from going under.
Yo,